From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The New York Times on Sunday published an expose of the CIA's expanding role in Afghanistan, according to two senior American officials. The Times reporters wrote that, quote, "The CIA's expanded role will augment missions carried out by military units," meaning more of the United States' combat role in Afghanistan will be hidden from public view. The CIA has a long and sordid history in Afghanistan of empowering fundamentalist warlords, encouraging the drug trade as a source of untraceable funding to buy weapons, conducting door-to-door night raids that terrified and abused civilians. The expansion of the CIA's role comes at a time when President Trump has announced an escalation of the war, which includes more drone strikes. Rather than ramping down the longest official war in modern U.S. history, Trump's government appears to be extending it. My guest is Matthew Ho. He's a member of the advisory boards of a number of organizations, including Expose Facts, Veterans for Peace, and World Beyond War. In 2009, he resigned his position with the State Department in Afghanistan in protest of the escalation of the war there by the Obama administration. Welcome to the program, Matthew.
Hi, Sonali. Thank you for having me on.
So let's first talk about what the CIA has been doing in Afghanistan, just even since 2001. There is a history that goes back decades that laid the groundwork, many would argue, for even the rise of the Taliban. But even just since the September 11th attacks and the U.S.'s original invasion post 9/11 in October 2001, what role was the CIA playing on the ground in Afghanistan?
Yeah, and I'm glad you referenced the role they were playing and the role the United States was playing for decades before. So often with Afghanistan, we want history to start on September 11, 2001. That's just simply not the case, particularly for the Afghans. Since 2001, the CIA has had a large presence in Afghanistan. That presence has been a paramilitary presence. It's also been a political presence, where they have officers who are stationed in Kabul who provide vast sums of money to various members of the Kabul government to make sure they're doing our bidding and staying in our orbit and not, flying off into the orbits of Iran or Russia or China or anything that they fear as they play their real life version of risk. But they've had quite a presence. They have been in cahoots with drug barons, with war criminals, and also too, as we've recently seen, as the as some researchers at the Afghanistan Analyst Network have explained over the last year or so, the CIA was involved with the formation of the Islamic State in Afghanistan. And this is simply, the CIA, along with the Afghan intelligence services, bringing over Afghan and Pakistani Taliban in an attempt to split or cause problems within the Taliban. And a couple of years ago, when the CIA and the Afghan intelligence service, the NDS, realized this wasn't working, they cut them loose. And at that point, those men then became rebranded themselves, remarketed themselves as the Islamic State. So, Sonali, this is no different than how the United States and the CIA have operated in any number of places, whether it's been Asia or Central America or the Middle East. So what we're seeing in Afghanistan is just a continual presence by the CIA that is inept meddling would be the best or the nicest way to describe it. But really, war crimes is probably the most apt way to describe it.
And if we were to talk just about the CIA's role in country after country historically, we could spend many hours discussing that. So obviously, this is an agency that has a dirty past. It's an agency that has serious notoriety around the world and also specifically in Afghanistan with doing the things that the U.S. would rather not be made public, right? I mean, I think this is important to acknowledge that the CIA traditionally takes on the role of that agency that performs covert operations that are unsavory, that involve underhanded tactics, criminal tactics. So the expansion of the CIA's role in Afghanistan should only lead to more breaking of ethical boundaries, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm not sure how many more ethical boundaries or moral boundaries or legal boundaries they could break. I mean, we know that the CIA has been involved in coups and interventions and election meddling in, you know, well over 80 countries around the world since the end of the World War II. So the fact that what they're doing in Afghanistan now, and they want to expand their presence, it doesn't come as much of a surprise. One thing that has changed, though, I think, with the CIA is that they are more attention grabbing. They are more willing to be in the headlines. The directors over the last couple of years, whether it has been Leon Panetta or the current director, Mike Pompeo, or John Brennan, who was President Obama's last director, who had been a career CIA officer, they're much more willing to go to these conferences and go to these world leader summits or Aspen Idea Summit type things, or be interviewed by journalists or appear on Meet the Press than their predecessors may have been. And with that comes this notion that the CIA is doing the dirty, underhanded stuff for our public safety, for our own good, because what they're doing, this goes back to how heavily involved they are in Hollywood. Just like the Department of Defense, the CIA is heavily involved in Hollywood. They help write scripts. In some cases, they have the final say on scripts. Argo, which won the 2013 Academy Award for Best Picture, is a terrific example of the CIA working with Hollywood to tell this story, this myth to the American people about how necessary the CIA is and what they're really doing. Well, they break the bounds of convention because that's what's necessary. And of course, the best example of that would be, you know, any of the Tom Clancy novels or the TV show 24 with Jack Bauer, you know, having to torture terrorists because the time bomb is ticking. And we know that all to be a myth. We know that all to be false. The reality of what the CIA does is they depose government, they commit human rights violations, and they commit war crimes over and over and over again for the last 70 plus years.
And in fact, one of the ongoing issues around the CIA is what exactly the CIA did in its so-called enhanced interrogation of detainees, which became the subject of the Senate Intelligence Committee, document and a paper that committee has been looking at, the so-called enhanced interrogation, which many experts say is simply torture. But going back to what you were saying earlier about CIA heads being more open, let's talk about what Mike Pompeo, the current CIA head, said specifically about Afghanistan. He did go to a security conference at the University of Texas, where he said, "We can't perform our mission if we are not aggressive. This is unforgiving, relentless, you pick the word. Every minute we have to be focused on crushing our enemies." I don't know exactly what that means, but to be focused on crushing our enemies basically sounds like incredibly dangerous rhetoric coming from somebody who's a leader in government.
Well, and someone too who has his own private army that's unaccountable to nearly everybody.
Which is what the CIA's paramilitary unit is.
Exactly. And while the CIA has always had some kind of paramilitary force, they have never had quite the paramilitary force, the miniature army that they do now, composed of scores and scores of commandos, numbering probably close to 1,000 now, who are former special operations. So they're former Navy SEALs or Delta Force or Army Rangers or Marines or what have you. And they work now for the CIA. The CIA also contracts out to private security firms. So you have a large number of private security contractors out there who are working for the CIA who are completely unaccountable. At least the CIA still, you know, I'm rolling my eyes and everything and sighing heavily as I say that, falls under the jurisdiction of the United States law and the oversight of Congress. You know, I mean, we're not
supposed to anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Supposed to anyway. But with private security contractors, they don't have that type of oversight.
Yeah.
They don't have that type of requirement to follow the law. And additionally, the CIA also now has its own Air Force. It has its own squadrons of drones that, you know, drop bombs, fire missiles. You know, one of the things that Director Pompeo said about Afghanistan was that we're going to get more vicious. Now, this is an agency, just to remind everybody, that in the past decade, besides the torture, besides the renditions, besides murdering, Larry Wilkerson, who was Colin Powell's chief of staff, he cites the figure of at least 100 people were murdered in CIA captivity or in COCA captivity. A lot of times what we'll do is we'll hand people over to the Iraqis or hand people over to the Afghans or whoever, and then they end up dead. Most recently, we're aware of the United Arab Emirates forces torturing people in Yemen with full complicity of American government officials and American military officers. So this is also too, as an agency, again, like I was going to say, about who, with the drone strikes, we're targeting funerals purposefully, and we're targeting first responders purposefully. So after we destroyed a house or destroyed a car, most of the time not knowing who was in that house or car, but we would then target the first responders, the ambulance people, the people who came rushing to the building to try and rescue any survivors. Again, too, the CIA would target funerals because the assumption was that after we killed these, as they call, high-value targets, other high-value targets would show up to pay their respects. I mean, this is a complete war crime. It's a crime against humanity. It's disgusting and it's aberrant and it's horrifying. But now we have this Director Pompeo, who was nothing more than a political hack, right? Before all this, before he became director of the CIA, who is now running his mouth saying that they need to be more relentless and more vicious than they were in the past. So it boggles the mind, Sonali, what they plan to do. I mean, I certainly have some ideas, but I don't think we're going to see anything new other than murder and torture like we've seen throughout these wars as well as in previous wars.
Now, has the CIA been charged with fighting the drone war? I mean, there was a time when it was essentially a CIA operation. CIA officers in Nevada would be controlling drones that dropped bombs. But under the Obama administration's rapid expansion of the drone wars, did that remain with the CIA? And is it now going to go back to the CIA? What has the CIA's role been in the drone wars?
Well, within the drone wars, and the CIA has done most of the work in Pakistan regarding the drones, particularly as the Pakistanis have put up resistance to the drones violating their sovereignty and violating their airspaces and killing their people. But as President Obama expanded the escalation of these wars in Yemen, in Somalia, in Syria, the CIA did relinquish a lot of that activity to the Department of Defense. And the Department of Defense, of course, has the infrastructure, the manpower, the logistics, and the financing, the money from Congress to conduct more of these campaigns, larger campaigns. So while the CIA continued to do the drone strikes in Pakistan, their drone strikes in other countries in Africa or in the Middle East became more limited, and the Department of Defense took over. That didn't really, as far as I know, result in any greater oversight or transparency in the programs. And what we know mostly about those programs a lot of times comes from leaks or whistleblowers. But yeah, they did. And so what you'll see, though, now is because certainly the CIA paramilitary teams that will be in Afghanistan, and this is what they are, this New York Times story spoke about the expansion of these CIA teams in Afghanistan, they will obviously need air support. They will obviously want air support. They will obviously want to have either drones or manned aircraft available to either bomb targets before they go in, bomb targets after they leave, or conduct close air support bombing in case they get caught in a firefight or something like that. Mm-hmm. So what will happen then is either the CIA utilize its own drones or it will just secund, it will just take aircraft and pilots and bombs from the Air Force and the Navy and have them be flying in support of the CIA, which is something that occurs very, very often anyway.
Matthew, I want to go back to what you were saying earlier about the U.S. role in the rise of the Islamic State. We saw recently the former president of Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai, who in an interview said, you know, he's become very critical of the U.S. war there. In an interview with RT, called ISIS, the Islamic State, a tool of the U.S., which is really interesting, given that not too long ago, he himself was a tool of the United States, really seen as a puppet president. What do you make of what he said?
Well, I don't, in some of Karzai's remarks, he actually made these in the spring as well, which was the same time that the Russian Foreign Ministry made these allegations or these assertions that the United States was assisting the Islamic State in Afghanistan, both directly and indirectly. I don't happen to believe that the United States is ferrying Islamic State soldiers or equipment to the Islamic State via our helicopters directly. I do, as said earlier, understand the genesis of the Islamic State in Afghanistan, how it came about as a botched American-Afghan intelligence operation to split the Taliban ranks, and that after they were disavowed from the Afghans and the Americans, they took up the mantle. These men, these former Afghan and Pakistani Taliban took up the mantle of the Islamic State because it's a good branding maneuver. It's a smart maneuver. It gets you on the front page of the New York Times and the Washington Post if you call yourself the Islamic State. If you call yourself something else, only people who are really involved and interested in this know who you are. But it certainly goes in line with the use of these types of groups like the Islamic State or Al-Qaeda or other radical extremist groups. We saw this most plainly in Syria, where the United States, both directly and indirectly, through Turkey, through Saudi Arabia, through Qatar, backed the Islamic State, backed Al-Qaeda in the early years of the Syrian civil war. And as far as we understand, still up until now, provides some support to various groups that, while not the Islamic State per se, are groups that you would call jihadist or Salafist, or groups that you would not say fall in line with American values, and certainly have been responsible for butchering other ethnicities and committing crimes. But we've seen this, you know, we saw and we know this because of leaked documents from the Defense Intelligence Agency. We know this because of the Podesta email dump from WikiLeaks. And we know this because Vice President Biden said it. He was very clear that the Saudis were pumping all these billions of hundreds of millions of dollars into the Islamic State. We know these things, and it's no surprise, no secret. The Intercept just published some more documents just this past week regarding the direct connection between, I believe it was Prince Sultan in Saudi Arabia, one of the crown princes in Saudi Arabia, and with the command of the rebel, these jihadist Salafist groups in Syria in 2011, 2012. So we've seen this, we know this. We see this also too right now in Yemen, where our backing, the American backing of both Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, allows them to commit these atrocities against the people of Yemen. And who benefits from that presence of Saudi bombers and UAE ground troops? It's Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. They benefit directly from that. So this is, during the Cold War, we did the same kinds of things. We partnered with groups that were antithetical to what American values are supposed to be. Of course, for those I think who understand the history, the tens of millions that have been killed in these wars by American troops or American proxies, We know that those are only values that are supposed to be, and unfortunately, you know, Sonali don't really live up to what we say we are.
Right. Well, finally, Matthew, going back to the idea of the CIA expanding its footprint in Afghanistan, I started our conversation saying that, you know, we wouldn't necessarily get to all of what the CIA has done, but I think it is important. In Kabul this week, Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, a former warlord, current warlord, really, was welcomed in Kabul, and he was one of the many, many warlords that was involved in destroying Afghanistan. The U.S. CIA, in particular, not only helped empower them against the Russian Soviet occupation and invasion of Afghanistan, but then after the fall of the Taliban, rewarded many of these same warlords with bags of cash, helped them, supported their bid to become members of parliament and get into the government. And they are also a huge problem in Afghanistan, and they are sort of living proof of the CIA's historical dirty role in Afghanistan, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you can see anywhere in Kabul, these men, and it's all men, and they are just as misogynist as the Taliban are, who are in power, who owe their power, or they're in other cities where they have their militias, and they're now like almost like feudal lords. But also, too, our tie-in with the drug barons, with those who are in control. And that's a great myth about Afghanistan, that the Taliban control the drug trade. The Taliban tax the drug trade, but the drug trade is controlled by those who are in power, whether in the government, in the militias, or in the military in Afghanistan, our partners, the American military's partners. But yes, absolutely, the men who destroyed Kabul by shelling it, who killed tens and tens of thousands of people in the early 90s, after the communist government fell, these are the same men that we gave all this cash to. These are the same men that we backed up with air power and troops and gave our commandos to. And this is the reason why Afghanistan is in the state it is now. Our backing of the worst elements of Afghan society alongside the Taliban. Now, I'm not apologizing or saying anything good about the Taliban here, but that the people we put in power were the very predators that the Afghan people, particularly those in the south, supported the Taliban because of. So these predators that were running the government, that were raping and murdering and committing banditry, we put them right back into power in 2001 when we kicked the Taliban out. I mean, and what really all comes down to, Sonali, of course, is that the Afghan people are suffering and suffering and suffering. And as long as there is outside involvement in Afghan affairs, as long as there is the United States, you know, doing these things, whether overtly by bombing or bribing or covertly through these CIA teams, which are just going to expand the reach of murder and torture throughout the country, you know, the Afghan people are the ones who suffer, because as long as there's outside involvement, there'll never be any type of reconciliation. And without reconciliation, there'll never be any peace in Afghanistan.
Well, Matthew, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your insight and analysis on this issue. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Matthew Ho. He's a member of the advisory boards of Expose Facts, Veterans for Peace, and World Beyond War. In 2009, he resigned his position with the State Department in Afghanistan in protest of the Obama escalation of that war. We've been discussing the current expansion of the CIA's role in Afghanistan. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.